From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this hour was made with a tweet on December 4th. Senator Kirsten Gillibrand tweeted, quote, "The future is female, intersectional, powered in our belief in one another, and we're just getting started," end quote. Writing for the Atlantic Monthly, Caitlin Flanagan said conservatives interpreted the tweet as a sign of the feminist apocalypse. Writing, quote, "When men will divide their time between buying tampons for their female masters and writing themselves right out of history," end quote. But she was also critical of Gillibrand's use of the word intersectional, both in the tweet and in discussions with the media. She accused Senator Gillibrand of playing around with the concept of intersectionality and using feminism to give herself a boost for a possible presidential run. Flanagan implies that some women, like Gillibrand, don't truly understand what intersectional feminism is and the disparities between white women and women of color. Well, this hour, our guests help us understand intersectional feminism, what it is, and the impacts it has. It's the subject of the first workshop of a new series called The Rock Idea Connection. We'll hear about that new venture as well, and there's a lot that they have planned coming up. So let's welcome our guests for the hour. Mercedes Phelan is a moderator for the Rock Idea Connection workshop on intersectional feminism and lead organizer for the Rochester chapter of Citizen Action of New York. Mercedes, welcome back to the program.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Also with us is Amy Ventura, co-organizer of the Rock Idea Connection and a board member for RYP, Rochester Young Professionals. Welcome. Thanks for being here.
Thanks so much.
And Calvin Eaton is a moderator for the Rock Idea Connection workshop on intersectional feminism and founder and executive director of 540 West Main Communiversity. Welcome back. Thanks for being here.
Thank you, Evan. Thanks for having me.
All right. So the event this Thursday is free. You were saying free. Calvin was mentioning right before the hour. It is free.
It is free. It's sponsored. Woohoo! So it's a free event this Thursday, downtown Y, 6 to 8 p.m.
6 to 8 p.m. downtown Y, and we're going to be talking about what intersectional feminism is and is not. And before the hour even really kicked off, we saw the phone starting to ring. Let's take some time to talk to our guests first. But if you've got questions or comments about intersectionality, how it relates to feminism, etc., you can call the program or you can email us this hour, connections@wxxi.org. We'll work some of your feedback in. Let's just start with a definition and what you'd like to see sort of accomplished in the conversation. So Mercedes, you know, you're moderating on Thursday, and there's probably a lot of questions about what intersectionality is and how it sort of functions in our society. Is there a sort of a, it's probably too complex to offer like an elevator pitch definition on intersectional feminism.
I'm going to try though.
So what's the shortest answer we can give, and then we're going to kind of go deeper here.
Yeah. So how I would put it is it's a crossroads between where gender and race come together. That was short. Right?
That was pretty short. Yes, that was pretty short. And then I guess the follow-up is it misunderstood often?
Yes. Yeah. I think feminism in general is oftentimes misunderstood, but the concept of intersectionality is as well.
Okay, so what would you like to come out of the conversations on Thursday that you're going to have?
I'm really hoping that people just get a better understanding of not only what intersectional feminism is, but some takeaways on how they can actually practice it moving forward.
All right, we'll hit that in just a second. Calvin, how do you define it?
Well, I'm always sort of like the textbook definition for myself. And so sort of to push forward what Mercedes shared is that it sort of is speaking about how discrimination doesn't exist in a bubble intersectionality. So we all have identities. I identify as a Black cisgendered man. And but when you talk about discrimination, there are things for individuals of color, whether they're male or female or other identifiers, that doubly discriminated against in a way that's different from just one of those identities. And so it's like understanding that. And so one quick example that we share in the workshop is talking about the gender pay gap. And so we know that there's a disparity with how much women in general are paid to men. And then you break that down, Black women, Native American women, other women, it's even less. So you have to recognize that for many injustices in this country, black women or women of color, people of color, are doubly discriminated against because of those intersecting identities.
Okay. And Amy, what are you hoping to come out of this conversation on Thursday?
Yeah, for all of our Rock Idea Connection events, we're always looking for great, open, honest conversation. And like Mercedes said, we're looking for people to come out of it with ideas for how they can take some concepts that might be, upon walking in the door, they might be a little bit abstract, but they can develop maybe some strategies for how to approach what they learn in these sessions in their day-to-day life, where they work, and their relationships.
So let's talk about that. Constructive action coming out of understanding the concept of intersectionality or intersectional feminism. And, kind of the easy question is, what do you want people to do as they gain the understanding that maybe you might bring here, Mercedes? So step one, what does productive action look like to you?
To me, it would be just being intentional. I think we just saw, for an example, the Women's March is coming up. I believe in Florida, I forget where in Florida, but they decided to cancel it because they already foresaw that women of color were not going to be present. So they canceled the whole thing and are looking for more productive ways to be intentional with women of color and communities of color. So I think that's like the first step.
Okay. What does action look like to you, Kelvin?
Well, I think it's listening to women of color, people of color, women specifically. We know that in this country, women of color have huge disparities that continue to present across all disciplines, healthcare being one of them, wage gender gap, et cetera. So oftentimes, women of color, their voices are not heard. And sometimes their voices are co-opted by other women, especially when we talk about the Me Too movement and how that was originally created by a black woman. And it wasn't until voices of white women amplified it that the world and social media and culture started to take notice of that. So it's really important, I think, for me, for sure, to take a step back and listen to the voices of women of color.
Okay, and when we look at the Women's March, Mercedes referenced the 2019 events, but going back to 2017, there have been, I don't think it's too big a word to say, some fissures within what maybe sort of broadly looks like a movement to say, is this movement representative? Is this movement serving all people who want to be a part of the movement? And some of the critics, and we may hear from them this hour. I mean, we've hosted programs on this about, sort of women's rights, women's march. And we have heard from not just, women, not just women, but often women who say, well, are we turning on ourselves too often? If we're canceling a march in Florida, does that, sort of disarm our effort to try to fight back against what we see as oppression? Can we find a more constructive way than just shutting down an event, et cetera? How do we work through that? And I know, Mercedes, you've heard those conversations, and I suspect occasionally they've been hard, sometimes frustrating. So let's hit that right away. For listeners who are hearing this going, the Florida Women's March shut down and wasn't representative enough. Are we too quick to turn on each other, and can we do it in a different way? What would you say to that?
Yeah, I would say that they did the right thing. I don't think that we're too quick to kind of turn on each other. In fact, I think that it seems to be that's only said when it's coming from white women. If women of color are not being represented, how is it possible that we're turning on each other if not everybody's there?
Okay, and let me read a little bit more from Caitlin Flanagan's piece in The Atlantic, where she touches on this subject. She writes, quote, "This summer at the Aspen Ideas Festival, I was on a panel with Brittany Cooper, the African-American professor and author of the much-loved book Eloquent Rage. Cooper explained that because of intersectionality, quote, now we can confront white women to say, your feminism is suspect if the only thing you want to do is use these social movements so that you can have access to the power that white men have. That's not what we're fighting for." End quote. And then Flanagan goes on to write, there was a frisson of excitement in the audience, and she continued, explaining that white women don't want to change the fundamental paradigm of race and gender in this country. They want to exploit it so they can gain access to the power that white men have. White women live in the house with white men. They were raised by white men. They raise white men. And what they want is to be able to rule the world like white men do. End quote. Do you agree with that?
Yes. Yeah, I do. Probably an unpopular opinion by some. But yeah, no, I definitely agree with that. And I think it's a very, very accurate statement.
Okay. And so when you have conversations with other white women who, I'm sure some hear that and go, no, that's not what I want. I want to be part of a movement that it really serves everyone. And some others might say, yes, that's fair. You know, like they're a little bit more, they might be introspective. When it's hard, when there's pushback, do you does it frustrate you? Do you feel like doors close? Are you seeing more doors opening with some of these conversations?
It really honestly depends. I think if somebody, for example, is coming to an event, they're probably more likely to be receptive and open to the conversation around it. But some people just want to argue their point, and then it's not going anywhere past that. So I don't even really try to bother with those people.
Okay.
Yeah.
You know, Amy Ventura said to me before the hour began, you know, you want to be a participant, but you really want to put the focus on some of the other guests. So you're here to kind of listen as much as anything, which I think I certainly appreciate. And one of the things that I try to do more in 2019, one of my ideas is talk and tweet less, listen more. maybe good for many of us. But when you read quotes like that, what goes through your mind as a white woman, and you think about these movements and you think about what they're aimed to accomplish, is it hard to hear that? That there are people involved with these movements who suspect that many white women are not really in it for everybody?
No, I don't think it's difficult to hear that, but I've also been kind of doing this work for myself for a while. But I also see myself as pretty privileged and with the opportunity to kind of immerse myself in these spaces, and that I have places where I can have these sort of vulnerable conversations. To me, sort of the onus is on myself to be always putting it back. If I do feel some sort of reaction where I'm initially feeling defensive, which I think is the thing that a lot of people feel when they would read something like that, is to say, now, why do I feel that way? What can I do about that? And how can I see from their perspective? More often than not, I tend to agree with opinions such as this. And I think that's just the result of recognizing where my privilege lies, and that as a white woman growing up in upstate New York, that I have sort of been seen as the norm. Even if I'm not a white man, I'm basically, you know, second in line. And that for me, my experience is standard. I will, of course, face some sort of discrimination along the way, but that I could never fully understand what other people deal with. And that being open to saying that, why should a white woman be in charge of the Women's March? Why can't we make space? And not just make space, but why can't they be the leaders as well?
Okay. I want to ask you on this subject, Calvin, because I know a lot of the work you do in terms of community education and mm-hmm. outreach is aiming to build bridges.
Mm-hmm.
There is, to some degree, a question of fragility that comes
sure,
into
yeah,
play.
Absolutely.
You know, people feel yeah. really, and I don't try to use that word flippantly, even though I know some kind of take it that way. But I think there are times where some people may shut down and not and say, oh, you're accusing me. You don't know me. You don't know the work I've done. How have you tried to navigate that when, you know, you're trying to build this constructive movement while also recognizing that some of the people who may join you, if you push them, they might feel like pushed out of it?
Well, I think making space constantly for conversations like we're having right now, and, you know, having Amy share her very vulnerable experience as a white woman in this country and in Rochester. And I think that that's really the work that happens at 540, is creating spaces so people can feel comfortable to have these vulnerable conversations, to say they may not understand everything, to say that they may not know certain histories because of you know, systemic and institutional racism in this country. So we know that when we talk about feminism or any other racial issue in this country, we have to take a look at the historical sort of lens of it and how much of the conversations that we're having today do not happen in history books, have not happened. The feminist movement was a movement that did not include Black women initially. Black women or Black people were not seen as human when you know those conversations were being had, and so a secondary movement had to happen from a historical perspective. So we can never take that history away from the conversation, and so part of what we do at 540 is sort of the education on that, and then creating safe spaces for people to be able to not understand, to want to be understood, to share their feelings and their viewpoints. And I think that in this workshop, Mercedes and I co-created it at 540 for these conversations, and it was really born from having these candid conversations in the community room, as we called them at the time. And so it's really all about listening as much as possible and creating space for that.
Okay. Do you, Mercedes, do you see any fragility as a barrier? Does it frustrate you at times? Do you think I'm worried about losing somebody if they're a potential ally? How do you feel those things sort of meshing?
No, not at all, honestly. I guess I'm going to use the stereotype of an angry Black woman. Like, if I lose people, you weren't meant to be in my life to begin with. And we're at a point in time where I don't have time to BS people.
Mercedes is very candid. And
yeah.
Say it like you mean it,
yeah,
kind of a person.
Exactly. And I'm like that anyway. But like I said, due to, you know, the situation in the world right now, like, I'm not going to sugarcoat it for anybody. So take it or leave it.
Okay. And that directness might spark some self-awareness in people too, you think?
Yeah. I think so, right? Sometimes?
Sometimes it does. Yeah, it does. Yeah, very candidly, yeah.
All right. So, listeners, it's a chance for you to interact here. We're talking intersectional feminism and what these movements reflect, what the mission is, and what representative truly looks like. It's 844-295-TALK if you want to join the conversation. 844-295-8255 or 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. You can email the program connections@WXXI.org. There's a workshop on intersectional feminism that the Rock Idea Connection is hosting on Thursday. Thursday at the Downtown Y. That's on 444 East Main Street. Networking begins at 6, and the presentation and workshop roughly 6:30 to 8. So about 6 to 8, it is free, and there'll be small group discussions about the concepts of identity, intersectionality, and feminism through multiple lenses. And so we've got the organizers here and some of the moderators here, and we're talking about their views on this. I see the phone already starting. So before we get to your phone calls, which I'm sure will be interesting, Mercedes, what did you make of Senator Gillibrand's tweet about feminism, about the future is female, it is intersectional? That sparked a lot of feedback in a lot of different directions. What did you make of it?
I don't know if I formed a complete opinion yet. I like the fact that she used the term intersectional feminism or intersectionality, but at the same time, I also don't want to see that used as just a platform for higher office.
Okay, so there is at least some concern you have that this was sort of cynically used for political gain.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Calvin, did you feel that way?
Well, just listening to it in the context, I hadn't heard it really until you shared it here. I could see where someone might say that. There's always a fear that these terms and this history that Black women have been talking about for many decades, again, gets co-opted by someone in political power and sort of using it flippantly without really truly understanding what it means. And so that's something that happens all the time. And so that you want to be careful of that, and you want to make sure that that doesn't happen.
Okay. I've got the phone starting to fill up here, and I've got men on the line first, so that's what we'll take first.
Bring them on.
Okay. Peter in Brighton first. Go ahead, Peter.
Hi, everybody. I just got on the radio, and I heard parts of the conversation. I grew up here, and as I got older, I became more aware of the racial divide and the segregation in this community. It's like South Africa, really. And at the same time, I found it really hard to be able to connect with people of color in our community because the places that I go, often they don't go. And I see myself in a gathering and it's all full of white people. And I want to know where I can brush up against other people. And yeah, I don't mind being called on my habits of thinking and my blind spots. And could you tell me where I can intersect with everybody else?
To borrow a term. Stay there if you could, Peter. Hang on the line for a second, and sure. I'll ask our guests to respond. Kelvin,
we hope to see you on Thursday.
Thursday is a good start.
The Intersectional Feminism right. Workshop at the Downtown Y.
Thursday,
6
p.m. at the Downtown Y in East Main at the workshop. But where else in sort of a kind of a regular routine, it seems?
Sure. Well, I know Citizen Action holds many events. There's activism around education, the school to prison pipeline. There's a police accountability board that's in Rochester that people are sort of coming together talking about how policing is done in Rochester. And so those are the work that's happening with that and with the Flying Squirrel. Flying Squirrel is a resource. In Flying Squirrel, I believe, is in Clarissa in the Cornhill neighborhood. Of course, 540 West Main University is a space where there are intersecting voices and people often. I don't know if Mercedes can sort of add to the list here.
Okay, Mercedes?
Yeah, I definitely agree with Calvin. You know, like there's a lot of social justice organizations in Rochester, including Citizen Action and many others who do a lot of work around racial and gender justice. And so getting involved with those would be a good place. Also, I think, you know, I don't know where you go in general, but I guess being more thinking about going to places in the city more often or different places than you normally would go.
There's so many, you know, the Muck Theater on Atlantic. Black Box Theater on Joseph Avenue. There is a ton of Black-owned restaurants, the Arnett Cafe being one of them. There's Zots, which has been talked about on Connections here on Chile Avenue. So trying to be purposeful in finding out the Black-owned businesses and really thinking about patronizing those and getting to know the entrepreneurs behind them. I think Kiva Rochester is an organization that supports all businesses in Rochester, especially those run by Black and brown individuals in the city of Rochester. Mm-hmm. So that's a resource as well.
And by the way, you can look up on our old podcast, a conversation probably almost 2 years old now. I don't remember exactly when, with the owner of the Arnett Cafe. One of my favorite conversations we have, and a fantastic stop. So, mm-hmm. So that's just one example, kind of endorsing what Kelvin brought up. But Peter, I think it's nice to hear from you, and maybe they'll see you on Thursday night.
Thank you so much. And that one is at the Downtown Y on Main Street, right?
You got it. 6 p.m. is where they will be.
6 p.m. All right. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you, Peter. Thanks for the phone call. It's 844-295-TALK. It's toll-free, 844-295-8255. Or 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. Michael in Rochester is next on the phone. Go ahead, Michael.
Hi, how you doing? Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Yeah, so I moved to Rochester about 3 years ago, and the first job that I was able to hold, I came out of a pretty rough situation in my life, was a Black-owned business where most of the employees were I'm also Black and I'm a Caucasian. Now, I learned so much there. I thoroughly enjoyed it. And my point regarding interracial feminism that I'm wondering about is where the line is drawn between where in the past there were many issues that the Black community was facing, and obviously women too, especially, to where today many women and Blacks have gained more rights that they should have had to begin with, right? But today it seems like in some cases it leans towards a privilege and entitlement mentality that is affecting the Black and women community in a negative way, where it used to not be like that. And in my understanding, it was about equality and really helping people to fulfill their destinies regardless of color, race, or religion. But in my personal experience, I think that sometimes people may have a victim mentality just because they may be Black or Hispanic or what have you, and that sometimes holds them back in ways. And I feel like I've seen that because I think it's hard sometimes to embrace the world feeling like you already have such a huge disadvantage. And so I think it was like that at one point.
Some caller,
but I think
I'm just going to jump in. You're,
and Michael, okay. Please stay on the line. I think we need to talk about this.
Yeah,
Calvin,
so,
you want to start?
You're making a few statements. I'm trying to understand your question, but I feel like in some of what you've said, you've sort of answered some of your rhetoric that you've already shared with us. So you've acknowledged that there have been, that you understand some of the historical structures systemically that have disenfranchised Black women and people of color in this country. And it sounds like you sort of understand some of the burden that many individuals continue to carry from those vestiges of slavery and the civil rights movement, et cetera. So I think one of the things that I would really sort of push you to do is sort of, again, listen to the voices of Black women and people of color in your work and in your interactions. You being someone who's a white man, you can never really walk in the shoes of Black individuals or people of color in this country and sort of see the world from our viewpoint. So I think it really would behoove you to listen, and instead of looking at it as playing a victim role, saying, even though there have been some strides made along the decades, there are still huge disparities across all industries, whether you're looking at pay, healthcare, policing, et cetera, that continue to put Black individuals in this country at a disparity much higher than their white counterparts. And you have to ask yourself, why is that?
In what specific ways, though? Because the facts that I see say that more white people are shot by white and Black cops every year than Blacks. I mean, Blacks represent, less than 30% of the population, but almost 50% of the crime. And I served over 3 years in state prison. I saw exactly how people have been targeted because of color. I witnessed it firsthand. I'm not denying that can exist.
Okay.
But I think in some places it doesn't, and the mentality can actually hold people back instead of pushing them forward.
So,
and so I'm wondering where
you can't see that disparity exists and then say that it doesn't. Either it exists to you or it doesn't exist.
No, because I came from very similar situations myself, I guess, and I don't feel like my skin color helped me any more than their skin color, didn't help them. In fact, many of them are way more successful than me, people that, I was involved with, because they've just made better choices,
Okay, so it sounds like you're looking at it from a very individual level and not looking at the system. So there are individual people of all colors and races who have hard situations and backgrounds, and there are people of color in this country who have sort of risen above some disparities and have positions of power. But looking at the system at large, across all systems, there are huge disparities that continue to oppress quite visibly and literally people of color solely based on the color of their skin or their gender or them being a Muslim woman or a Black woman. That does not happen.
Can you give me a specific example?
Sure. Can we give him a specific example? We can give some examples.
Because I'd be with you. If there's injustice, I want to stand right beside you and stand up for it.
I mean, I guess I'm just really confused in general on, I don't know if you watch the news regularly, if you're aware of, the Black Lives Matter movement, if you're aware of, things like that. So I don't know how you're not seeing it, I guess, in general.
Well,
I don't know if you could.
Because most of my friends are Black. I mean, I just came out of a huge Black workforce. And, I mean, they're still, my best friends that just happen to be of dark skin color.
So one of the things that you can
experience with them,
read,
they think that Okay.
So, Michael, there's a documentary on Netflix called 13 by Ava DuVernay.
Let me write that down. Okay, yeah. 13.
It's called 13, and that really speaks to sort of the criminal justice system.
Okay.
Well, yeah, I think it's kind of obvious. Like if a white person gets pulled over by a police officer, they will either be let go or they'll have a lesser charge opposed to somebody, possibly somebody who is black or of color who's getting pulled over as well.
Well, like I just paid $400 for a speeding ticket, so I'm not sure how that.
Right, but somebody else could have gotten their license taken away for that. You see what I'm saying? Like, there's a difference.
Yeah, well, I mean, and I would agree. Like, people have been, but I'm saying that I think today those are secluded, and the general is
Michael,
very,
they're not.
Very
they're
equal.
Not secluded. If you're looking just at the way black individuals are policed, even just in traffic. System, the statistics show us that black and brown people are pulled over in many jurisdictions at a significant rate compared to how many are in that population. And I don't have specific statistics in front of me, but if you just sort of Google crime and race or traffic stops and race, you'll be able to see some really sound statistics that show you the disparity just within that system of policing.
I do have facts and statistics in front of me from the DOC, the Department of Corrections.
Okay.
And I've already quoted some of them for reasons such as that
So, Michael,
blacks represent a minority, a part of the community, but account for vast amounts of crime. More white people are shot every year by police than black people. And to be honest with you, why isn't no one bringing up that over 80% of crimes against blacks are committed by other black people? Like, why aren't we focusing on the culture rather than just the skin color? And that's my point, because when you narrow everything down to solely based of color of skin, you're going to deal with places where it's real and places where it's false. But you're saying that systemically, like mm-hmm. in the very fabric of the system, mm-hmm. is racist.
Yes.
And I'm saying that I think that the evidence purports that, yes, there are racist people who do things like that, but systemically, it's equal opportunity.
Okay, so
let me just say,
in front of me that I just quoted again, like for example, that blacks represent a minority of the population,
right,
but represent over a higher number of the crime. How can you blame that on the people being like
Michael? Let me jump in because we have other people we need to get to, and I appreciate the phone call. I would just offer one idea, having hosted a lot of programs and a lot of different sort of related threads here. Just take a look at marijuana arrests in this country. If a white person and a black person have marijuana on them, who gets arrested? Who goes to jail?
Well, I don't think anybody gets arrested for possession anymore, at least not in New York.
Okay.
In fact, it's about to be passed.
One of the reasons there's a movement to legalize in states like New York is because of the disparity of incarceration, of police action in terms of along racial lines. That is.
And it does happen still.
So that's.
Really? Of marijuana?
Absolutely. Yes. Yeah, absolutely. So that's one example. But I hear you asking questions, and it sounds to me like you called because you want to keep engaging. So I would just say, you know, we've got to get to other callers, but I hope that you can join them on Thursday night. So, Amy, why don't you tell them again, Thursday night, what's going on?
Yep. So it's Thursday night. It's a conversation on intersectional feminism. It's at 6 p.m. at the Carlson Metro YMCA on East Main Street.
Okay. And there's a lot of complicated sort of layers that go into this. And so before we kick our only break, and then we'll come back to more of your phone calls. Mercedes, when it comes to intersectionality, I feel like, and again, I'm still trying to learn and absorb and listen.
Yeah.
But I feel like there's a lot of different layers to what constitute either advantage or disadvantage, if you want to use certain terms. So race is an example. Uh-huh. Sexual orientation uh-huh. is an example. Gender is an example. Poverty and sort of wealth. Able-bodied is an example. So there's a lot of different examples. But if you build a society over decades that concentrates the wealth away, generally speaking, from certain populations and in the hands of others, generally speaking, then I think it's when Michael is exploring, well, how come crime rates are XYZ? It's more complicated than looking at a crime rate. It seems to me it's valuable to know, well, what sort of structured the hierarchy of where the wealth is?
Yeah.
Are people who do not have the wealth more likely to commit crimes? And, you know, how does this all play together? Is that part of the idea of intersectionality?
Yes. Yeah. And I think what's interesting is when we talk about intersectionality, especially within feminism, a lot of times it's the only thing that's talked about is a wage gap. But police violence actually is a strong part of intersectional feminism. And I think that I could get into like a whole thing about that. But it does everything, obviously. Everything is intersected. And so, yeah, like it doesn't do anybody justice to look at it in a singular way.
Michael, I'm glad you called, and I hope you'll continue to engage with the program. And I know these are hard conversations, and again, a lot of us are just trying to listen as much as we can. So you've got the event, 6 p.m. on Thursday night. It is free at the Downtown Y. And we're late for our only break, so let's kick that break, and then we'll come right back to some of your phone calls and comments. And remember, it's not just intersectionality, it's intersectional feminism on Thursday, so we'll stick with that theme as well when we come back. I'm Evan Dawson. Wednesday on The Next Connections, another Harry Potter exhibit debuts in New York City, and we ask the question, will there ever be another book series like it? The first Harry Potter book came out right when the internet was becoming a thing. The last Harry Potter book came out before Facebook really took off. There are a lot more distractions these days. Will there be another? What made it so magical? We discuss Wednesday. Our guests are here talking about the Rock Idea Connection workshop on intersectional feminism on Thursday. There's a series of workshops coming up. And Amy Ventura, how can people learn more about, because it's not just intersectional feminism, that's this Thursday, about what's coming up in the future weeks?
Of course. So the Rock Idea Connection is a collaboration between Rochester Young Professionals and the Rock City Coalition. There are two groups that engage young professionals and really people that don't necessarily identify as young either. But in Rochester, to have conversations, meet other people, and to just learn from each other. So going to either of the websites, you could visit Rochester Young Professionals Facebook or website, and the same for Rock City Coalition. You can also visit Calvin's site, 540 West Main, as he is the host.
Okay, and what's young, by the way? 39.
Young at heart.
Looking right here.
39. 39
young at heart.
Turning 40 is young.
Yeah, especially like for Rock City Coalition, there really is no age range at all. We've had people attending these events all across the spectrum and who work in various places, live in various places.
Okay. Jen in Rochester was kind of taken in that last phone call and wanted to join the conversation. Go ahead, Jen.
Hi, I just was kind of taken aback by Michael's comments because I'm also white, maybe he's not seeing white privilege in his everyday life, and I'm not even sure if this is what this conversation is about, but I certainly see it because I work in an office, probably about 30 people, and there's not one person of color that works there, and we have interns every year, and it, you know, so far past couple of years, no interns of color, so I was just maybe taken aback because maybe he's not seeing that in his personal life, but certainly I'm seeing that in my life.
What do you, Jen, what do you think sort of can be done? If you see that as an issue, what are you sort of feeling like can be done, or maybe you're thinking about doing yourself?
Maybe getting more involved in the intern program so we can bring more kids of color in. I'm not sure going to schools and talking about what I do for a living. I think there just needs to be more connections.
Okay. Yeah. Thanks for the phone call, Jen. Mercedes, how do you make of possible action there? If she sees an issue, for example, just in her own workplace, what do you see?
Yeah, I think that, it needs to be incorporated in a lot of ways, I think, especially in the social justice movement within itself. Like, I think a lot of times it's very race-oriented, race-based, which is important. But I think we also need to use a gender justice lens when we're looking at social justice movements as well.
Jen, thank you for the phone call. Before we jump back to phone calls, let me read an email from Andrew, which represents, I think, some of the pushback to the concept of intersectionality, which comes in various quarters, but it routinely carries a concern that it subverts individuals for the sake of a group. And Andrew's email is right on that line, and so let's ask our guest to respond. He writes the following. One of your panel members, in my opinion, marginalized the caller Michael by making reference to individuals being different than society as a whole. I feel they inferred that the individual is insignificant. I firmly believe that when I treat a person as an individual, I am giving them my full attention, my devotion and respect, no matter what their backgrounds are. If I concentrate on their backgrounds, I believe I will fall into setting up stereotypical racial situations which can lead to no good. That's from Andrew. Common concern. Let's talk about that.
Yeah, so I think people are looking at, there are individuals who are racist or blatantly or overtly racist or prejudiced or bigoted. But I think that we also have to look at the system at large. And so even though there may be callers or listeners who they themselves try to look at everyone in the same way and try to not prejudge or be prejudiced against individuals who are different than themselves, we have to look at the institutions, and that the institutions are made up of individuals largely, mainly, that are not doing that. And that's why we continue to have disparities in the criminal justice system, in the housing systems that oppress purposefully, because the systems are built so that individuals of color continue to be marginalized and do not get ahead in the same way that other individuals do. So we can't forget that.
Please, yes.
Yeah, no, I was just going to say, to me, it sounds a lot like colorblindness, right? Like I'm not looking at the person's color. But the thing is, like, me being a woman and me being of color makes me who I am. And so not only is that how I identify, but mm-hmm. I need you to understand not only that that's who I am, but those things also come with positive and negative with how I move through everyday life. Mm-hmm. And those don't get to be just tossed aside because you don't want to recognize them.
Right. And for so long, white people are the standard. And so it's challenging to look at yourself in a racialized way when for so long the system has made your race the norm. And so it's easy to say, well, I don't see color. Well, you should, because the way that individuals of color move through the world is very different from the way white people move through the world. And it's okay to acknowledge that. And it's actually not okay not to acknowledge
that.
Exactly.
Would you tell Andrew that everyone you meet, you know, you're going to understand certain aspects about them right away because of mm-hmm. you know, certain sort of ways of understanding identity. But, you know, Andrew's concern is, well, Mercedes, you won't give individuals a chance to be, let's say, within a group, gay male Latinos. Can you, you know, create space for people to have differences of opinion, different ideas, individualism? His concern seems to be, no, we're so stuck in a group mindset that individuals can't flourish differently. What would you say?
Yeah, I guess I would just refer back to my beliefs around intersectional feminism, which is that, like, yes, I'm acknowledging that we are all women, and that our gender is important, that there is, like, a togetherness that comes with that. But then at the same time, I am also of color, and so I need for you to recognize how, again, that makes me different, and that's and how I move through every day is different. And so, yeah, color blindness is like an issue, and I think it needs to be addressed in general. But we need to stop. Like, we need to stop saying that we don't see color, because we do. Everybody does. And the sooner you recognize it and deal with that, and whatever privileges that come along with that, the better off we will be.
Okay, let me get back to your phone calls, and Manan is next on the phone. Go ahead, Manan.
Hi, Evan. I'd like to ask, firstly, to the people in the program, I know they're going to have a gathering on Thursday. If these people have a place where they meet regularly, and do they have a phone number they can give me? I'm very interested. I'm a woman of color, and I'm also a woman. And as you know, I spoke in your program several times on women. And I think there are great books out there on Pearl S. Buck, The Hidden Flower, Americana by a Nigerian woman. And there are so many great books out there by minority women. I also know that America is a place where how we look, what we look like and our skin color determines everything from housing to, you know, crime, how we're treated, mm-hmm. in, you know, in a car. Everything we do in America is determined by what we look like. And it has been going on for centuries as the government or the hate crimes, everything that's going on in America. But being a woman and a woman of color is far more difficult than being a man of color.
Yes.
And I face those struggles every day. And I'm very glad that they're doing intersectional this meeting. And Senator Gillibrand is a white woman. And I know a lot of white women. There are wonderful white women out there like Pearl S. Buck. And she writes great books. And but there are women who are always using minority women to get to power or do other things or abuse minority women. So I'm very glad you're having this discussion. And thank you, Evan.
Yeah, Manon, thank you for the phone call. So Manon's asking for sort of regular meeting. So again, it's 6 o'clock on Thursday at the Downtown Y, but other information there?
Yeah, I would say to get plugged in with Rock City Coalition. We're always having open meetings and we have a lot of working groups around issues that are important to Rock City Coalition. So to get plugged in there would be a great place to start.
Okay, Mercedes?
And I was just gonna say, like, me and Calvin have been doing conversations at 540 for like over a year now, right?
Yeah,
on many different subjects. And so I think just looking at that calendar and seeing upcoming events and stuff like that would be a good way to find
out. Where's the calendar, Calvin? Yeah,
540westmain.org.
540westmain.org if you want to check that out. Manon, thank you for the phone call. And Mercedes, can you add a little bit to that call? Because there was a moment where I saw you really sort of nodding and agreeing where she said, you know, as a woman and a woman of color, she finds, you know, sort of her daily struggles even more ardent than men of color.
Yeah, so I think that almost goes back to kind of where I was going with police violence is, you know, if we talk about police violence and the men that have been my, you know, brothers that have been killed due to police brutality, their names are a lot more known than women who have been killed by police brutality. And so it comes up a lot, I think, within our own community is like, you know, one thing that I've heard several times and it is actually, you know, kind of really hits hard is that the most destructive thing to a woman of color is a black man. And, you know, sometimes it's because of a lot of times it's because of violence, domestic violence issues, et cetera, that black women, women of color die at the hands of a black man.
Let me get Amy's email. Amy says, I'd like to send my regards to Mercedes. I was her teacher in high school, and I'm so proud of her. I am disabled, and I work with the Rochester Spinal Association to help all people with disability, but especially the black disabled community. It is so hard for them to access and get resources that many white people access so easily. Keep fighting as I will. That's from Amy.
Aw, thank you, Amy.
Nice.
I miss
wonderful.
You. She was an amazing teacher.
See? The whole community listens to this program. Thank you for listening, Amy. I appreciate that. And Mark wants to know, would your guests vote for a white, straight male for president?
So I'm going to answer this for you. For me. Sorry, I can't obviously speak for everybody.
You can answer for me as well.
But I don't know if we're going to agree, though.
Okay.
This might be the first time I've... Well, no. I don't know, but I'm a Bernie fan. I know. Don't make that face. But no, I love Bernie Sanders. So yes, you might see me doing that. Would I love to see a woman president? Yes, but I would love to see a woman of color president.
Okay. Calvin?
I like it.
You like that?
Yeah, I would. Yeah.
Okay. Mark, thanks for that email. And let me grab we got to keep it tight. This is Ray. Hi, Ray Ray.
Yeah, just real quick.
I'm
Hi,
Ray Ray.
A white cis man. Hey, everybody. Thank you for the women and men and people of color who are going out of their way to, you know, meet Michael where he's at. And this is the work that white people need to be doing the most. And I just want to really quick say, just to give Michael something to chew on when he was throwing out a lot of statistics. You know, Michael, if you believe in the economic integration of schools and neighborhoods and a hand up and people of making 100 a year, 80 a year, below 60 a year, below 20 a year, all living together and helping each other, it's empirical evidence that whites live around more diverse incomes and go to schools with other kids, other white kids who have more diverse incomes and live in diverse neighborhoods than blacks. Blacks are more likely to be in concentrated poverty than whites, and the social mobility is just not there intersectionally. So just chew on that, please.
Yeah.
And take it into consideration. Thank you.
Michael, thank you. We're down. Ray, thank you. Calling about Michael's phone call. We're down to our last minute and a half or so. So, Mercedes, what do you want to leave the listeners with as we think about intersectional feminism? You get ready for the event on Thursday. What's an important takeaway here?
I don't know. I think I'm going to let Calvin go first on this one. I need a minute.
Okay, Calvin?
I think even from today, if people can do nothing else but to listen to the voices of women of color.
Yeah, I would say for people who maybe feel like they're in a bubble or they're feeling defensive about this conversation, to know that there are conversations like this happening in the city and places you can go to listen and to learn and to just maybe expand your worldview a little bit.
Okay, Mercedes?
I thought of it. So I think that my biggest takeaway, so is even for those who are already involved, you know, in the movement, in some social justice aspect, I think that honestly, they should come too. I think that a lot of times we feel that we're super educated on something, and there's always space to learn and grow. I hope some local activists join us.
I'll just close with a quick email from Ken in Ithaca, and this is not to pile on Michael. I want to say again, I'm really glad he called, and I hope these dialogues can continue and be constructive. He says, the fact that Michael listened to and agreed with Evan's explanation of systemic racism but challenged the black guests who spoke from their existential and intellectual understanding of racism is exhibit A on the persistence of racism, the incapacity to believe what people say about their daily lived experiences.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
So thank you, Kim, for that. And again, thanks for all
the
dialogue. I want to thank our guests for being here. Calvin Eaton, moderator of the Rock Idea Connection Workshop coming up on Thursday and founder and executive director of 540 West Main Communiversity. Thanks for being here. Mercedes Phelan, also a moderator and lead organizer for the Rochester chapter of Citizen Action of New York. Thanks for being here, Mercedes.
Thank you, Evan. Pleasure as always.
And Amy Ventura, coming to us not just from Rock Idea, but also Rochester Young Professionals. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Rob Braden, engineer. Megan Max, the producer. I'm Evan Dawson. Talk to you tomorrow on Member Supported Public Radio.